From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the streets of Baghdad, jubilant Iraqis celebrated the apparent collapse of Saddam Hussein's central government today, beheading a toppled statue of Iraq's dictator and cheering American soldiers as they solidified their grip on the city tonight on Point, the sights, sounds, and significance of Baghdad's big, big day. We begin with the latest developments from Washington. John Diamond is Pentagon correspondent for USA Today and joins us now. Hello, John.
How are you?
Very well. John, what are we hearing from the Pentagon today? Lots of very arresting scenes out of Baghdad. What's the military assessment of where things stand?
Well, it was a day of, I'd say, contained jubilation in Washington among the senior Bush administration officials. Secretary Rumsfeld opened his briefing by saying this is a good day for the Iraqi people. The White House made clear that President Bush watched on television the toppling of that great statue of
You could hardly miss it on every single network across the country, maybe the world.
Yeah, I suppose that severed bronze head will make a nice coffee table somewhere in Baghdad now. But it was. But the administration, while trying to contain its public celebration, also pointed out that there's much unfinished business to be done. Vice President Cheney talked about meetings that will begin in southern Iraq to set up begin the process of setting up a new government. There are still CIA operatives and assets working with the U.S. government to help find scientists who might point in the direction of Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction. There are still at least three good-sized cities in northern Iraq, including Tikrit, Saddam's home base, which are in regime hands. And there's uncertainty about Saddam himself, as well as some POWs that remain in captivity. And so there's more fighting to be done, but it does appear that clearly this campaign is probably beyond the halfway point, and the map showing coalition control of Iraq it looks like about 65% coalition control and some narrow strips of Iraqi control.
John Diamond, let's take it right back to the capital city of Baghdad first. Vice President Dick Cheney today called the entire invasion one of the most extraordinary military campaigns ever conducted. It must feel good to say that a week after things were not looking so rosy, but they sure looked striking today. What is the level of U.S. military control now of the Iraqi capital? I'm reading in fresh reports coming out that as the sun comes up on the day after those celebrations, fresh mines were found strewn on the road between the city and the and Baghdad International. Is there still organized military Iraqi resistance in Baghdad?
I dropped the word organized. There is scattered resistance. There are pockets of resistance. A U.S. intelligence official I just spoke to told me that virtually no one in the senior Iraqi government in any of the major ministries showed up for work today. It's unclear what happened to Saddam in that B-1 strike on the neighborhood Monday night, but what is clear is that it appears that the people of Baghdad believe that the regime is gone, either having fled or dead. And so the senior government ministry simply did not appear today. There were firefights, some very sharp firefights happening within blocks of the celebrations, and those will continue. And the army and the Marines, who are on opposite sides of the Tigris River in Baghdad, do not have complete control of the entire city, and don't really have the numbers to establish complete control. So there could be a dangerous situation that develops if the Iraqi authorities leave, but there's no new authority to replace them, and you have this city with volatile mixtures of ethnic groups and a lot of pent-up resentments and hatreds boiling over.
And the military in a kind of mixed role, war fighting and suddenly policing or seeing the need for policing, whether or not they're prepared to do it.
Right. It's going to be a major challenge to establish orders in the places where the Iraqi regime has collapsed because, as I say, right now the coalition forces just aren't there in the numbers needed to provide a local authority, and Baghdad especially is a divided city ethnically.
John, of course, the entire country is, John Diamond. What about engagements outside the capital city today? Was there fighting outside of Baghdad?
Yes. There apparently is a pocket of resistance, some 1,500 to 2,000 fighters in the town of Kut, which is on the
southeast
on route between Kuwait and Baghdad. And this pocket of resistance, which appears to be remnants of the Republican Guard and the Fedayeen and other fighters, has popped up and is presenting a problem. There are apparently death squads active in western Iraq, which special forces for the coalition out there will have to contend with.
Death squads going after whom?
It appears to be that they are intimidating a movement along the east-west highway that links with Syria. And that route could be very important as an escape route for senior Iraqis. The CIA is concerned about and has picked up spotty sort of rumor-level intelligence about some unidentified senior Iraqis making good an escape from Iraq into Syria. And then, of course, you have a flow the other way of some fanatical fighters and perhaps some weaponry moving from Syria into Iraq.
These are angry Syrians who have come to join the Iraqis in their fight.
Right. And apparently these death squads, or at least that's what the U.S. government calls them, are trying to enforce some sort of security and movement along that important route, and there just is not a large U.S. force out in that region. Then, of course, we have the main region of Iraqi control centered on Tikrit to the north, about 100 miles north of Baghdad.
Saddam's hometown, and then the oil cities of Kirkuk and Mosul.
That's right, that's right. And
what's going on up there?
What's going on there is that there were some major coalition gains there with the taking of I believe, a town near Erbil and an important hillside near Mosul. I'm not sure what the situation in Kirkuk is, except that the coalition forces are pushing closer and getting the kind of heavy reinforcements they'll need. But it appears that what's happening is that the 4th Infantry Division, that much-talked-about unit...
That was supposed to come through Turkey, but did not.
That's right, which is now just beginning its move out of Kuwait into Iraq, probably within a couple of days, that organization will be given the assignment of dealing with Iraq north of Baghdad.
John Diamond, is there talk today at the Pentagon of how and when the U.S. will announce that this is over?
Well, there were some quotes from commanders in the field indicating that there really doesn't seem to be an authority that could surrender, which would give you a kind of closure and which might send a signal to everyone to drop their arms. It seems that the investment of Tikrit will be a major development. The confirmation of Saddam's status would be a major development. Those things seem to be fairly critical, and they still could be days or maybe even a couple of weeks away. But Secretary Rumsfeld has said that it's difficult to assess just when that point will come. But the ability to move freely about the country and focus mainly on rebuilding, on political rebuilding and physical rebuilding will be sort of the turning point in that question.
John Diamond, let me ask you a very detailed question about events that many people will have seen in Baghdad today, in central Baghdad, Firdaus Square, where this now famous statue was and was toppled.
Right.
There came a point in the very long kind of milling around and effort to bring that down when U.S. soldiers climbed up to the head of that statue, and one young trooper briefly draped an American flag over the head of Saddam Hussein. There had been, 3 weeks ago nearly now, an uproar in Umm Qasr, mm-hmm. when U.S. forces took the port there and an American flag briefly went up, and we heard that the high command said, get that down, we're not here to raise the American flag but to liberate Iraq. How could it have happened that would happen? Is it happen again today? Is that the enthusiasm of one soldier? And a question that came to my mind was, do American soldiers have earplugs in their ears as they go about their business? Are people talking to them and saying, you know, put it up, put it down?
Well, it was Marines who carried out that particular assistance. They rolled in as the crowd of people was sort of taking on this immense iron and cement statue with mm-hmm. one measly sledgehammer, not yeah. making much progress.
Right.
These Marines were upbraided apparently for that incident, and I think that probably a word came up immediately since it was being broadcast on live TV, get that flag down.
And I mean, the president himself was no doubt watching, and one can understand the enthusiasm, but that image is probably not what the image that Washington wants to project.
Definitely not. I suppose if the event had been completely and perfectly choreographed from the White House, they would have simply allowed the Iraqi people to take that statue down ground with no assistance from the U.S. But, of course, the thing was, the edifice in a sort of symbolism was too immense to take down without outside help. The flag sort of was quickly tucked away and replaced with an Iraqi flag, and then the heavy equipment was then brought to bear to bring the thing down. I suppose, though, this incident may pass fairly quickly in that it's unclear to what extent people inside Iraq are seeing these images with the TV, for the most part, shut down.
Though we'll hear later in the hour that outside of Iraq there was a lot of attention paid to that today in the Middle East. John Diamond, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're very welcome.
John Diamond is Pentagon correspondent for USA Today. He spoke with me from Washington.
Downtown Baghdad this morning, we're seeing evidence of the collapse of any central regime authority. The streets are full of people celebrating. While pockets of regime security forces may remain, they appear to be far less effective at putting up any resistance.
What you're seeing as celebration in the streets is a recognition that the regime is gone and will not return again. It can never be returned to what was.
Certainly anyone seeing the faces of the liberated Iraqis, the free Iraqis, has to say that this is a very good day.
The president is heartened by what he has seen on the streets of Baghdad because he knows it means that people are becoming free and that the Iraqi people deserve their place in freedom just like everybody else.
April 9th, 2003, will go into the history books of Iraq today in Baghdad. Washington got the picture it wanted. U.S. Marines sweeping through the heart of the city, greeted with cheers and flowers and babies held aloft. And Iraqis got a big taste of freedom from a brutal dictator. The world watched as they shouted in the streets, looted government buildings, and cheered the toppling of the statue of Saddam Hussein. 3 weeks ago, Saddam had vowed to crush the U.S.-led invasion. Now he may not be alive. The war is not over, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said today, warning of difficult and dangerous days ahead. But today was a big day, a day to dance and cheer. Tonight, we're going to the streets of Baghdad and beyond to listen in on the sights and sounds and emotions of a remarkable day. What did you make of today's outpouring in Baghdad? Were you glued to the news? Was this the breakpoint? Was this liberation? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Throughout this hour, we're going to be hearing from reporters on the scene in Baghdad and the region. Right now, I'm joined in the studio by Ahmed Al-Rahim, professor at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University. Good evening and welcome, Ahmed Al-Rahim.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. You are, of course, Iraqi by birth, and I'm sure you watched today with rapt attention. What did you make of what you saw? Was this the counterpart of the fall of the Berlin Wall, or was this a made-for-TV collage of images?
No. I think it's the Arab world's counterpart. It was a tremendous event. This is an event that Iraqis had been waiting for generations. And I cannot begin to express how happy I am. I think whether we agree with this war or not, we have to acknowledge the happiness that the Iraqi people are feeling right now.
And when you saw the pictures, did it look? Would you describe this as jubilation, or isn't this just young men milling around, flashing grins at tanks? This is the real thing. This to your Iraqi eye. Is the citizens, the residents of Baghdad saying, hallelujah, something like freedom has come?
Exactly. No, this is the real thing. And Iraqis are in the streets, all over the streets of Baghdad, in the north, in the south, and they are all happy that Saddam's reign of tyranny has ended.
Is that what it looks like to you? It's over. It's done. You agree with the voice of the general that we heard just now?
I would say that there is still some fighting to be done in certain parts of Baghdad. In the north, there are some cities yet to be liberated, Tikrit and so on. But I would say, by and large, this is the death blow to Saddam's regime.
Ahmed Al-Rahim, did you think this day would ever come? Did you believe it would happen?
I have to say that I can't believe it, but it looks like it has finally come, and it is a very happy day for Iraqis.
It is a big, big day in Baghdad. It has been smiles and flowers, shouts and looting and lots of questions, but this looks like the end of Saddam Hussein's Baghdad. We'll be hearing lots of sound tonight from the streets of Baghdad, firsthand reports of everything going on there. Stay with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and you can join us. What did you make of the day's celebration in Baghdad? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Were you glued to the news? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Baghdad's big day, its emotions, and its significance. BBC World Affairs correspondent Raghi Omar has been reporting from Baghdad for 6 years. Today, he described what it was like to watch jubilant Iraqis celebrate the collapse of Saddam Hussein's control of Baghdad.
This was how the end of an era was heralded. The American Marines rolled into the deserted streets of an Iraqi capital that will never be the same again. Armed to the teeth and with little opposition, they began to take control. Word began to spread slowly. As the Marines moved deeper into the city, Iraqis began to shed the fear of decades. They used to chant for Saddam, now they're pledging their loyalty to George W. Bush.
Why are you very happy?
And then the big push began. They thundered into Baghdad. The roaring sound of tank engines resounding around the city's streets. They drove past the government buildings that had been smashed by 3 weeks of airstrikes. As they did so, more and more Iraqis began to greet them. It was looking like a conquering army entering an open city.
American armor is moving at will across whole swathes of Baghdad. This is just one of the main avenues they're plowing down. People have come out welcoming them, holding up V signs. This is an image taking place across the whole of the Iraqi capital today.
They'd arrived and they wanted Iraq and the rest of the world to know. They came to our front door, the hotel where Western journalists had reported the war. More and more Iraqis were gathering to greet the Americans. For them, the darkness of the last 20 years under Saddam was crumbling. They wanted to bring it all to an end and tear down the statue of the dictator. At first, the Americans didn't get involved. The pictures were being beamed live around the world, and they joined in. An American armored personnel carrier drove up to the statue to help bring it down. This is how regime change was going to be defined today. It was a breathtaking image.
There it is. 55 years of hatred and rage as they jump up on the statue, trouncing it with anything. Oh, they're taking their shoes off. They're smashing it to pieces. They're waving their fists in the air.
This was the moment that all the cruel years of Saddam Hussein was ended by the sheer rage of ordinary Iraqis. Whether he's dead or alive hardly seems relevant anymore. His rule and control has gone.
This was just this local neighborhood where our hotel was, where we've been reporting this war. And people just came from the houses, they'd lost their fear, they came in and tore his statue down. But this wasn't just one instance in Baghdad. It was taking place across the whole of the city. From the moment the war began, there were private moments when I thought in my mind's eye, what would it be like when I saw the first British or American soldiers after 6 years of reporting at Iraq? And nothing came close to the actual staggering reaction to seeing American soldiers, young men from Nevada and California, just rolling down in their tanks. And they're here with us now, tonight, in our hotel. They're in the lifts, they're in the lobbies. It was a moment that I'd never, ever prepared myself for.
BBC World Affairs correspondent Raghi Omar reporting earlier from Baghdad. Ahmed Al-Rahim, you can hear the emotion in this reporter's voice. He's been there for 6 years. He's seen a lot of Saddam Hussein's Baghdad. And today, it's not He's an outsider, and you can hear the emotion. For you, an Iraqi, take us deeper into the complex of emotions that you're experiencing today as you watch and listen and imagine what's going on there.
Well, I have to say that it is truly an unbelievable moment for me. I mean, seeing the suffering that Iraq has gone through, one looks at the Iran-Iraq war and the million or so Iraqis that were killed in this war, the senseless war. One looks at the invasion of Kuwait for what? For Iraqi nationalism? For Saddam's vision of pan-Arabism? All these wars that Saddam has put the Iraqi people through, and then these years of sanctions, of manipulating the sanctions, of creating a mafia to distribute and sell and the food that's supposed to be going to the Iraqi people.
And when this war began 3 weeks ago, could you have imagined, did you imagine that we would see these scenes as we saw today in the way that all this has unfolded?
I have to say, in my heart of hearts, I do believe that these are the scenes that we were looking for, and these are the scenes that were going to come about.
Because, yes. Of course, there was that awful moment when it didn't happen in the South, and millions of Americans thought, oh, my God, what if we're going in here and we really, really are not wanted?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons for that, and I think one of them is that the Iraqi people were following orders from the military, from the U.S. military, the coalition forces, asking them to stay indoors, asking them not to come out.
Asking is a nice word for it. At gunpoint, there were murders when people disobeyed these orders.
Yes, that is true. There have been innocent civilians lost because of this.
Ahmed Al-Rahim, stand by. I want to get some more sound from the streets of Baghdad today. Bob Nicholsberg is a photographer for Time magazine embedded with the 3rd Battalion of the 1st Marine Division. He witnessed the statue of Saddam Hussein being pulled down earlier today. I asked him to describe that scene.
In the beginning, there weren't many people at all outside. In fact, probably more journalists than civilians. But gradually, civilians took up the courage and came out with a sledgehammer and a ladder and some rope and tried to pull the statue down. Finally, the Marines brought one of their larger tanks up and assisted in pulling it down.
We all watched as an American flag went briefly over the head of Saddam Hussein to be replaced by an Iraqi flag. What happened?
Not quite sure, but an Iraqi flag did follow the American, and then neither flag was up, so not a bad bit of color, I must say. At least both sides were represented.
And, Bob, what kind of neighborhood was this statue in? We couldn't really tell from the static TV pictures.
Seems like a rather official neighborhood with bigger homes, larger apartment blocks, bigger hotels, a beautiful mosque, palm trees. Part of the older section of downtown Baghdad.
And, Bob, what else did you see around Baghdad today?
Empty streets, a lot of burned-out cars, quite a few dead bodies, and a lot of civilians caught in the middle trying to go from A to B, and looters.
Did it generally have a feeling of a city that was celebrating?
I'm not sure if you could call it a city celebrating. There's been a lot of shooting off in the outer areas that you can hear from this location tonight, and I'm sure people are still fearful, but in the residential areas where people could come out 50 feet from their house, yes, there was a lot of cheering. It's hard to figure out what Iraqis really feel. They've been under the thumb for so long that any visible signs of jubilation may be taken the wrong way by somebody who is either in law enforcement or was in law enforcement. There's still a lot of paranoia here. That's definitely evident, but I think it'll take a while to get the real sense of celebration here.
How would you characterize the emotions expressed on the streets?
The signs of joy were genuine, but there are a lot of people who are quietly walking around, checking things, not really quite sure. Again, Tom, this is a neighborhood, from what I understand from other journalists, that bad guys were controlling and were not allowing journalists to go out and operate prior to today. So it's a mixed bag here.
Were you free to travel? Did you have open access to the city?
Well, considering I'm in an armored Humvee with a 50-caliber machine gun, yes, we went everywhere we pleased. But we were quite concerned about the moving Fedayeen who are still around.
And what about the mood of the U.S. troops you've seen today, Bob Nicholsberg? Were they caught up in the emotions of citizens of Baghdad? Were they helping fuel those emotions? Were they still on guard?
A bit of both. Generally, the young kids here are quite happy to see folks pleased at their presence and not having to be totally on their trigger. But yes, they're also told to be very careful of cars coming up to them too quickly or people getting too close to the vehicle. So there's a bit of both.
And finally, Bob Nicholsberg, as you sit in Baghdad tonight, does this have the feel of a liberated city?
In part, yes, but I think there's still some areas that are under contention, and not everyone has got the white flag out. There's still some violence to be expected.
Bob Nicholsberg, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Bob Nicholsberg is a photographer for Time Magazine in Baghdad today. He spoke with us just a couple of hours ago from outside the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad, where the statue of Saddam Hussein came down earlier today. I'm joined in the studio by Ahmed Al-Rahim, professor at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University. You watched that statue come down. That was the image that was played again and again. I'm sure because of its iconic quality, this had that big-time feeling, that kind of Berlin Wall feeling. It didn't hurt that it was right next to the hotel where hundreds and hundreds of journalists have come through. But when you looked at that crowd, who did you see there? Was this a cross-section of Baghdad? Was this just Shiites? Who was out? Could you tell?
I saw Iraqis, Iraqis of all backgrounds, Iraqis that are happy to see their city and their country liberated. I saw children, adults, old and young out celebrating the liberation of their country.
You know, I've seen how this kind of day happens in different cities, and you can feel it in the reporting coming out today. Here's a Reuters report talking about girls peeking around gateposts and waving at soldiers, and old men with saluting and flowers being thrown at the tanks, rose petals fluttering down from the rooftops. Do you think we'll see more of this, or is this a one-time thing and now Iraqis are ready to move on to their own business, or is this going to be a rolling phenom?
Well, I mean, not all of Baghdad is liberated, and certainly there are other cities in the country that that will be liberated, and I think that we'll see more of this to come, maybe not on such a grand scale. The other thing I want to say is that the idea of flowers and candies being thrown at the troops, I mean, this was much greater than that. You had Iraqis coming up to soldiers, kissing them, hugging them. I mean, there was much more emotion expressed than simply throwing candy and flowers. Mm.
And you see it, and you see it as genuine. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Earlier, I spoke with Andy Nelson, a photojournalist who's been traveling with the 1st Marine Division for the Christian Science Monitor. I asked him what he's seen in Baghdad and what kind of day it's been for the city.
Well, right now we have a crystal clear night with a half moon. It's just beautiful. And in the background, we have no sounds of artillery, no jets flying overhead, and no bombs being dropped, which is kind of a nice, peaceful way to enjoy the evening. Looking back on the day, I've seen Marine columns moving into the city and the streets lined by people as they've been waving them on and cheering and basically reacting to them in a sense of jubilation. One of the things that I've been struck by is just the number of people who we saw on the streets. One boy I saw was waving palm fronds over his head and his fans was cheering in the background, and it was quite a remarkable scene as this was happening. The other thing that sticks in my mind is civil disorder that's been happening with looting in some areas of the city where the people have just been helping themselves to whatever they can get their hands on.
Andy, the reports coming out of Baghdad, I'm looking at one here from Reuters that says the scenes today recalled the 1989 fall of the Berlin Wall. Did you have that scale of sense of celebration?
The sense that I got from the people was that there was definitely a mood of celebration, a mood of enjoying a day that they may consider their independence or their freedom day. What I could see in the faces of the people was that there was a sense of relief as well as the joy.
Did you have the chance to talk directly with Iraqis?
We talked to several Iraqis today, and what the people were saying was mostly to the Marines. They were thanking them profusely and also indicating that they had no love towards Saddam Hussein. We actually had people also point out several weapons caches as well as four absolutely huge missiles that had been parked by the military next to a shopping center. The people themselves are the ones that are coming to the Marines and telling them about these weapons.
And what are those interactions like right now between the U.S. soldiers and Iraqi civilians? Are they hesitant in approaching the soldiers? How are the U.S. soldiers responding?
I think that the people, the Iraqi people, would love to be able to go up and hug many of the Marines, but the Marines themselves obviously have to take somewhat of a hesitant reaction to that. They still have to be on the defensive in this situation, not that they're not being kind to the people or they're not responding to the people, but the interaction has been generally positive, and they just have to be able to still be on alert.
Did you see resistance today in any of the areas where you were, Andy?
I could hear resistance. I could hear small arms fire in the distance. It sounded like 50 caliber machine guns returning fire. My understanding is that the Marines did encounter scattered resistance, and it was characterized to me as literally neighbor street by street, that one street there could be celebrations and the next street there could be snipers.
And what about the Marines, the U.S. Marines themselves, Andy Nelson? What were they saying today as they saw the Iraqi response and felt this kind of what's been described as a tipping point in the capital city?
I think that the response of the Marines is twofold. One, I think that they all feel like they have are working towards accomplishing their mission, that they feel like it's gone as well as can be expected, and that they also have a sense that now that they're one day closer to home.
Andy Nelson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Andy Nelson is a photojournalist for the Christian Science Monitor. You can view an album of his photos taken in Iraq at our website, onpointradio.org. Ahmed Al-Rahim, here it is again. You hear this reporter reflecting the emotion of that day. In your view, what does this day mean for Iraq? We heard someone there talking about it being an Iraqi Independence Day. Can it be seen that way?
I mean, not yet. I mean, I think it'll take time for some official Independence Day to come about, but it's certainly one day in the closer to a national Iraqi Independence Day. Certainly the images, I think, have been burnt into the consciousness of Iraqis and the world. I mean, this is a momentous day, the statue coming down, the people in the streets. This will be remembered, I think, forever in Iraq.
And a lot of losses behind this day, on the way to this day, in your family and others.
Yes, that's right. There have been a lot of losses. These are unfortunate losses, but there have been losses in Iraq over the last 30 years. I mean, more than a million Iraqis have been killed and murdered by Saddam and have been imprisoned. So it's a bittersweet day for Iraqis, some Iraqis certainly.
It's a big, big day in Baghdad. We're talking tonight about the smiles and the flowers, the shouts and the looting and the questions, but this looks like the end of Saddam Hussein's Baghdad. What did you make of the day's celebration in the Iraqi capital city? Were you glued to the news? Did you have a Berlin Wall high today? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the big, big day in Baghdad today. Smiles and flowers, shouts and looting, and lots of questions. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Ahmed Al-Rahim, professor at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University, and an Iraqi by birth who is looking back with a lot of emotion himself at what's happened this day. Right now, Kevin's calling from Fall River, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes. Well, congratulations on this, the fall of Hussein. But my question is just how long will the honeymoon last? It seems that the only thing that holds the anti-Saddam Hussein opposition together is Saddam Hussein, who's no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And my question goes to the idea of internal divisions and the relationship between internal divisions in Iraq and possible external interventions by neighboring countries. And a related issue, the contradictions between, this domino theory that the United States, at least some very influential elements in the United States want to see Iraq be used as a means of calling into question neighboring regimes.
And let's do
and
it again next door.
To democratization in Iraq.
Kevin, good questions all. Thanks for calling. Ahmed Al-Rahim, What about it? I mean, who couldn't be happy to see the statue of such a brutal dictator fall? At the same time, we can hear in our listeners every night of the week this tremendous ambivalence about America being involved in another country's business so deeply. How long can this honeymoon last? And what do you think about this idea of rolling a carpet of democracy across the region?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is we should acknowledge that this is a very happy moment for Iraqis and not deny them this thing. As far as the internal divisions of the oppositions, I mean, this is natural. Any opposition is going to have internal divisions, and these will have to be worked out.
Iraqi oppositions.
These will have to be worked out domestically. As far as external influences, this is going to be very important that we do not allow Saudi Arabia, we do not allow Egypt to have a hand, or Iran to have a hand in how Iraq is going to be run and who's going to be running it. As far as the
honeymoon of Americans and Iraqis that we saw on the streets today, can that last long enough for an effective, a successful transition?
I think that it will have to be for Iraq to be a success. I think that Americans will have to be involved in one way or another to keep pressure on the United States to fulfill its promise of democracy and liberation of Iraq and to sustain the efforts.
Let's get one more call. Bob's calling from Jackson, Wisconsin. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. Gosh darn it, this is a super program. I am first of 69th Armor from Vietnam.
Yes.
And
your thoughts today, Bob.
And the thought was when they brought that piece of machinery in there.
That big U.S. tank up to the statue.
And that was not a tank.
Okay.
That was a VTR. I used to drive one of those in Nam.
A VTR, well, it's something with some pulling power.
A VTR is called a variable tank retriever. What it is that is to a tank what like a hoist would be for your single-family vehicle.
And we saw it at work. Bob, what did you think when that American flag went over the head of Saddam Hussein? What did you think when it came down?
I thought that the guys probably got a little too exuberant. I thought when they brought it down was cool. I thought when I was telling my wife when they were doing that winching, when they winched and winched and winched,
yep.
If you look to the left side of the top of that boom, that was an Iraqi flag that they put back up there.
Yes, we saw that.
You didn't see it much, but it just, and I thought that was excellent.
But it did make it back up. Bob, thank you for your call. There we hear a veteran's voice recognizing the equipment and the role that the Americans were playing there today. Well, it's got to be a big lesson for American soldiers in the streets of Baghdad. The shooting's not over, though. Do you think we're going to see holdouts, guerrilla warfare here, or could the emotion today kind of sweep Iraq and push that into the margins, Ahmed al-Rahim?
Well, I think certainly other cities in Iraq are going to feel this and are going to be impacted by the images that we saw today in Baghdad. I think there is still potential for guerrilla warfare in Tikrit, in other cities in the north that haven't yet been liberated from Saddam.
But tonight, in your heart?
In my heart, I think that we will see more of these images as other cities become liberated.
And there's the word for the day. Liberation. Ahmed al-Rahim, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Ahmed al-Rahim, Iraqi by birth, professor at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard University. Christopher Dickey is Paris bureau chief and Middle East regional editor for Newsweek. He's been reporting from Amman, Jordan, since the start of the war. I asked him if the images people are watching in Jordan are different from those people are seeing in the United States.
I think that everybody is seeing the same images, but I think the reaction is very different here than it is in the United States. Look, there is a problem with humiliation in the Arab world. The whole history of the Arab world, in fact, is one long story of humiliation. And so there's a sort of a built-in pattern in these situations where Arabs tend to put their faith in the wrong leaders, in the wrong dramatic incidents, and then be disappointed, and then be humiliated, and then the anger starts to build again. And I think that that's what we're already seeing here. There was a lot of anger in the Arab world generally, and here in Jordan, about all the civilian casualties, about the nature of this war, about the way this war was begun and the motives behind it, or what were perceived as the motives behind it. When Saddam seemed to be holding out, even though people hate Saddam, I don't think he has many admirers, there was a brief period where people thought, well, here finally is someone standing up to the greatest power on earth and doing so week after week. Now that he appears to be gone, there's a sense of disillusionment. There's a tendency to say, how can we work with what's happened? But the anger is still there. It still underlies a lot of the emotions and a lot of the thinking in this part of the world, and it's not going to go away.
Christopher Dickey, is there no level at which Jordanians can share joy with Iraqis today at being rid of a tyrant, or apparently nearly rid of a tyrant? Does that not connect at all? That's a very strong, I think, visceral response in the United States. Does that have no resonance in Amman?
Well, it doesn't. No, it doesn't have a lot of resonance. I think that people are looking on these images and they feel sort of bereft of another possibility of sustaining their dignity. But there is another thing that you have to take into account, which is what those images are that you're seeing. You're tending to see images from the Kurdish part of northern Iraq, which has been semi-independent for 12 years and didn't really suffer through much of this fighting. And then you're seeing images of a very small crowd. In fact, the journalists outnumbered the Iraqis in that crowd, in which U.S. Marines pulled down the statue of Saddam. And then you're seeing images of people making V signs while they're looting. You know, it isn't exactly what Americans think they're seeing, at least not from a Jordanian or from an Arab point of view. But has Saddam been defeated? Yes, and I think people should rejoice for that. But in terms of jubilation that comes across on American television screens, that isn't quite the way it's perceived in this part of the world.
What about the idea of a fresh start for Iraq? Washington is very big on that these days. That's the kind of theme behind everything, is that we are going to clear the decks here and give Iraqis a shot at a much more open and successful society than they've had in a very long time. Do Jordanians respond to that idea?
Yeah, actually they do. There are a lot of Jordanians I've talked to who say, let's throw all the cards up in the air. Let's have this invasion. Let's have this occupation. Let's get rid of Saddam. Let's break out of the stagnation that this Arab world has existed in for so many years, and maybe something good will come out of it. But the counterbalance to that is the basic fact that in this part of the world, people live in history, and they live with the precedents of the past. The very American idea that you can sort of say, let's forget the past, let's just look to the future, is not only something that's hard for people in this part of the world to accept, it runs counter to the whole sense of who they are. Their society, their culture, is built on affinities with history, with place, with faith, with all kinds of things that are relatively ephemeral in American society. America's a society built on the future. This is one that's built on the past. And already the past that's being built is not a very happy one from an Arab point of view.
What about the demonstration of U.S. power that this war has provided to the Middle East? How does that play out as Baghdad now apparently falls?
Well, I think for the governments, it's daunting. For the would-be terrorists, it is not. The lesson of this war for people who hate America, and there are many and probably more today than there were yesterday, is that the way to fight the United States is through terrorism and by building or acquiring weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure that that is not the lesson that America wanted to teach, but it is the lesson that a lot of people are learning. You will see, I think, a race by many countries now to actually acquire nuclear weapons and other very serious weapons of mass destruction, because the lesson of this is that Saddam didn't use anything. Apparently, he didn't have anything. And maybe that was why he was attacked and that was why he was defeated. The other lesson, and it's very perverse, is that conventional weapons cannot go up against this American army. But unconventional weapons, like box cutters, can be very effective in inflicting enormous pain on the United States.
Christopher Dickey, it's hard to hear this on this day, but we're looking for the light here.
Wait a minute. Let me turn the whole thing around, okay?
Yeah.
It's not just because it's possible to argue both sides, but there has to be a note of caution sounded.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you have to say Iraq is a great country. If it can be held together, if the people can pull together, if the United States is very, very smart over the next few months, then Iraq has more potential probably than any country on earth to be not only viable, but rich and prosperous and eventually democratic. It has water, it has oil, it has an industrious, smart population that's not too big and not too small. It's got a lot of arable land, and it has a wonderful strategic location. That makes it an enormous prize. And if the United States acts very wisely and skillfully, then that can be exploited to the advantage of the region, to the advantage of the people of Iraq, and one hopes to the advantage of the United States. The problem is that when you go into these situations, you don't need to go in with dreams. You need to go in with a real appreciation of the dangers involved. And it isn't always clear that those are evident to the U.S. government, and it is absolutely clear that those are not evident to the general population of the United States.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Does the way that this war has been prosecuted, Christopher Dickey, give you more or less hope that the aftermath might be handled in such a way as to make Iraq in some dimension a positive model?
Well, I wish that it gave me more hope. I think the way that this war has been prosecuted has been primarily on military terms with a kind of idealistic gloss to it that is appealing to the American people. But I don't think that the public diplomacy has been handled in a way that took into account the feelings of the Arab and Muslim world really at all. What you hear coming from the president, while it's good in the sense that he's saying the right things, is really tokenism as far as most of the people out here are concerned. They feel affronted. They don't see why this war had to be fought. They're glad Saddam is gone. They hope the Americans don't stay, but then they're afraid that the Americans won't stay because they're afraid that the result, if the Americans leave, will be the breakup of Iraq and chaos in the middle of this incredibly volatile neighborhood. And there's just a sense that this is a result of American adventurism that was meant to address domestic political imperatives in the United States and ultimately will not solve the real problems of the people out here.
Have the TVs been on all over Amman today? Have people been glued to them? What have you heard them saying?
They've been mesmerized by them. And I think that the initial impression was, wow, Saddam's gone. And look at those American tanks rolling through the middle of Baghdad. What does all this mean? And then in the terrible way that a silly little symbol can turn a great moment into a bad one, you have an American Marine draping an American flag upside down over the face of Saddam Hussein. You could hear it palpably among the people I was with. Look at that. Oh, my God. Can you believe they've done this? And that could be the shape of things to come. Let's hope not. I think that the people who are coming in now from Kuwait and from elsewhere are a lot smarter than the Marine who put that flag on Saddam's face. And let's hope for the best.
Christopher Dickey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Christopher Dickey is Paris Bureau Chief and Middle East Regional Editor for Newsweek magazine. He spoke with us from Amman, Jordan. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Tamar Morad, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Micheline Boudreau and Ben Meyer Abbott. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for